You are about to enter the pop, pulp, and subcultural minds of several individuals. What may leak into the ether can sometimes be too strange, too confusing for the average human mind. When nerds assemble.
Hello, and welcome to episode 24 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
And there is a lack of Cookie this week. Some would say he's too busy being delicious. Others would say...
constructed pipes. Internet pipes.
Internet pipes.
Locked internet pipes.
Locked internet pipes. He's gone from broadband to narrowband.
Yep.
He had a visit from Mario.
He had a visit from Mario. So basically Cookie's internet's being a fudging bastard at the moment.
Whoa!
Yes. No, Cookie, hopefully we will have him back next week. Whether or not his ISP will be in one piece afterwards is another matter altogether. We've got several bits of news this week, highlights including discussion about some character in Man of Steel, Mozilla's mobile OS, some Dragon Ball Z news, of all things. And we will be looking at a certain director's shift from one major franchise to another. But first, rumour has it that Jimmy Olsen is being portrayed as a female character in Man of Steel. Discuss.
I like the way that's phrased, as being portrayed. As though it's like going to be a guy dressed as a female Jimmy.
I know, such is my ability to use grammar. It's brilliant, isn't it?
Rather than actually being played by a female actor.
Yeah.
He's going to be portrayed as a female actor.
A female lady girl.
but in all seriousness, weren't you saying, Retroid, that he's the kind of character where it doesn't really matter?
He's just there.
Yeah, I mean, the character of Zoe, who was pretty much kind of like Jimmy...
What, Zoe?
Chloe, sorry.
Oh, right.
Chloe in Smallville. He was pretty much like a cross between Lois and Jimmy for most of the entire franchise. Mm. She was just kind of like... she was very female and very much a news reporter. And it worked. And she spent a lot of time with Clark. And it worked. So
bearing in mind that Jimmy, as far as I'm aware, he didn't really have like any relationships with anybody. So it's not even as though his sexuality is going to change, because he's never really,
certainly not in screen productions. Yeah. He's not really portrayed much as having a girlfriend or a boyfriend.
He's pretty much just the other Daily Planet reporter.
But I can just imagine the outrage that people are going to have that this character has ovaries rather than testicles.
Though a comicbook.com sort of article about this that I looked at did point out that at least one issue of the Superman comics, Jimmy is in fact a girl because of some weird switcheroo universe thing that happened. But this was a while ago. Superman kind of goes away from Earth, comes back, and everything's like opposite gender-wise, except for himself, because he wasn't there at the time the switcheroo happened.
And he's super, anyway.
Yeah. Nobody mentioned about the fact that sort of like Lois being a guy, though. I think that would be interesting. Very interesting.
It's just anything like Superman. There's only a handful of characters that are actual characters. It's like Lois has to be Lois, a Lois.
Mm.
He has to have a boss who is in charge in the job, even though, no one knows he's Superman apart from Lois. And you've got to have another reporter who isn't Lois.
Yeah.
So it really doesn't matter.
I kind of wish that for this one they'd perhaps update it, because it looks like it's meant to be set in our time. So they'd updated the nuances of the Daily Planet, kind of what they've done in the comics recently, with the fact that actually the Daily Planet would be struggling on its knees at the moment, probably wouldn't have many permanent staff. And in fact, the character of Jimmy, if in fact Jenny in this instance, would perhaps not even be an in-house photographer, but a freelance that they just call upon when needed.
Yeah, isn't Clark supposed to be doing a blog now or something?
That was the last thing I heard in the comics. I don't know if he's like been sort of like brought back into the folds of reputable paper-based journalism or not.
I have to say, though, it does remind me of... Do you remember Thor when that was first released in the cinemas?
Yeah.
And people were complaining because I think it was like the character of Heimdall or something like that was black. Whereas in the comics he was white and everybody was... Well, not everybody, but certain people were getting really, really uppity about the continuity. And it's like, it doesn't matter.
Have you seen...
Oh, no, they've hired an actor who looks slightly different.
Mm.
Yeah, that's that whole pigmentation thing, which is not really an issue.
No. I mean,
you know, we're dealing with a fictional sort of world to begin with.
Yeah, it's, of all the things to have an issue with in, with the Thor film, which I wasn't a huge fan of, the colour of one of the characters is not one of them.
And don't forget, oh, it's like Kingpin and Daredevil was played by... Oh, poor thingy Bobby died last year.
Mm.
I can never remember his name, which is really annoying because he's so good. He was in Green Mile.
Yeah, I was just going to say, is it the bloke from Green Mile, who I can't remember the name of either.
We're sorry. In your memory, we're sorry. We can't remember your name.
We think you're awesome. We just have terrible memories.
Yeah. but yeah, it's just the whole sort of like stick and can. But then I think the fact that it looks like the Daily Planet is still a thing just kind of annoys me. In fact, you know what? In the real world, the Daily Planet probably wouldn't even be free online. It would have scuttled behind a paywall by this point. In fact, actually, maybe they should bring that into the comics so that they can slowly get younger readers used to the idea that maybe they should pay for content.
Just a thought.
It might be slightly controversial. So are we okay with the idea of Jimmy being Jenny or whatever?
Yeah,
why not?
Yeah, don't care, really. Go on.
Okay.
Have Superwoman of Steel, come on.
Superwoman of Steel. Actually, I think I saw some pictures on one site earlier today that they'd photoshopped, like, a female, well, so a Batgirl or a Batwoman in, like, the Nolan outfit. And a sort of a more up-to-date kind of Supergirl or Superwoman outfit. And that looked kind of cool. But at the same time, if anyone was going to do a Batwoman or Batgirl, I'd go Batwoman and actually do it like the current comics because that character's pretty awesome. But anyway, moving on. Mozilla made a bit of a kind of trumpeting like noise last week. And if you can't remember, Mozilla's those guys that like, well, I say guys, that group of open source developers that make that like web browser that tons of uses. I haven't used Firefox in ages personally, but they've got an operating system for mobile devices coming out at some point in the next 12 months. And the developer devices for these phones running on this operating system are shipping in February, and they're being developed by, I think, somebody called Geeksphere? The Spanish.
Geeksphone.
In
partnership with Telefonica.
apparently, it's meant to be more sort of entry-level devices for developing markets, not for us Europeans or Americans or Japanese, whatever. More for somebody who might be trying to actually tweet from their phone in pick a random African country. Ethiopia, I don't know, somewhere where there's a chance that somebody might have a reasonable amount of cash that they could buy a sort of a lower version of a smartphone. They're not as powerful. I think they're not as powerful as mid-level sort of Androids at the moment.
Yeah, I'm looking at the spec and it's like half a gig of RAM, that kind of thing. So it's like, yeah, they're quite low spec.
Yeah, I suspect actually it's probably no more powerful than the HTC Wildfire that I'm holding in my hands right now in order to keep track of the time of this episode.
Don't think you're tweeting.
It can tweet just about and do maybe a couple of things. Sometimes it will actually cooperate and make phone calls.
And
so,
check into Foursquare.
And check into Foursquare. That'd be great. Developing markets will finally be able to check into Foursquare.
Check in to get glue. You're addicted. Admit it.
Maybe a little. But yeah, so they're finally shipping that. And I suppose my main issue with this is that the fact that... So obviously iOS, okay, that's high-end. Android's all levels. Windows, it's a bit of a mixture. But then, of course, Canonical announced the sort of Ubuntu OS the other month.
Yeah.
And now we've got... I mean, I knew Mozilla OS was probably on the way, but I didn't realise it was this on the way until the announcement last week. And it's just kind of like... It's just... To me, it's just kind of like it's further fragmentation.
Mm. Yeah. Okay. And the mobile phone market does not need more fragmentation, really. And Android does that quite well on its own.
Yes. Yes, it does. I mean... Mr. Retroid, you're perhaps older than myself.
Perhaps.
What was it like when there were competing operating systems for computers, like more so like when it wasn't just Windows and Mac?
So
back in the day.
Now competing actual platforms or competing operating systems?
Both. What was it like back then?
Well, with competing platforms, obviously the Commodore 64 was ace and the ZX Spectrum was rubbish. And the less said about the Amstrad CPC, the better. But seeing as Cookie's not here. But you had all the DOS versions and GEM and OSs like that. And it was all a massive pain in the arse.
And this is what... I mean, it seems that we have not learnt from history, then, when it comes to mobile devices?
No, they're seeing the landscape as it is, where it's something like, 20-30% iOS and about 70-odd% Android. And they're thinking to themselves, that's a big market. Yeah, those are roughly the specs.
Oh, roughly the figures.
Yeah.
Outside, I assume, America.
Yeah, America didn't have the smartphones we had, like, you know, the Nokia Symbian type phones and, you know, things like that. So when iOS and the iPhone came out over there, it was like a completely new thing to them, because the Nokias had never gained traction there. So that's why they're all with iOS. And that's fine, but the Apple devices are premium, because... Mm. Apple like making lots of money.
See, I can understand to a certain extent creating an operating system by itself, because obviously you got people like the desktop equivalent of stuff like Linux and Unix and whatnot.
Yeah.
But having it on hardware, like pre-installed, I don't think that's a good idea.
The only thing so far as I know, the deal with Android is that they don't charge for use of it, and that's why it's so popular. It's effectively, they allow you to put it on anything, and then if it uses, you know, if they recognize the device, then there's the, you know, the Google Play store, and they take a cut there, and that's how they make their money.
Yeah,
by getting the devices in people's hands, and then they can get a little, you know, cut of any sales on them. Now with this, I presume Firefox OS and Ubuntu are looking for a similar sort of thing, because Ubuntu has the online store, so you can buy things. And here's a little hint: have a look for Ubuntu store and Super Meat Boy for a little bit of the kind of thing that can go wrong with online stores, seeing as apparently they were a little bit naughty about putting Super Meat Boy on their store for sale. And the developers weren't that happy with it. But I presume that's the kind of thing they're looking for, so they can get... So they can offer the OS and say, it's free, put it on your devices, we'll give you a store. If anyone buys anything through the store, hooray. And we can say we've got X million devices, you know, in people's hands, and, you know, certain such market share. And, yeah, I can't really see the point, unless they're going to be running everything in Java or something, which we really don't want to go back to.
I'm...
It, It's market fragmentation, which is bad enough anyway.
It's going to bring more hassle for developers trying to make sure that their apps can reach as wide an audience as possible. But the other thing is that I think Mozilla were trying to trumpet the fact that it's got quite a bit of HTML5 capability. So rather than obviously having to develop a native app, you'd be kind of sort of creating almost apps out of HTML5 web pages.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was going with the Java, but I forgot about the HTML5.
Yeah, I think people are trying to avoid Java when they can, but really you can't avoid Java. It's just everywhere.
Yeah, so they're wanting it to be interoperative, which is fine. I see something like this, and instead of my reaction being, oh, I wonder what they're going to do with it, it's, oh, don't do that. You know, just try and build on someone else's, and then at least, you know, we can all benefit.
I mean, if Rim, the BlackBerry operating system, doesn't completely die, and they somehow manage to perform some kind of Phoenix-like action in the next 12 months, then it's going to be an extremely busy OS scene.
I mean, the thing with this is, there are things that iOS could do better. There are definitely things that Android could do better, even though I'm far more favorable towards Android than, you know, iOS because of the openness of the platform. And I can, you know, run software and certain types of software which iOS don't like. Like emulators and media players, things like that. Things I'm interested in. So, you know, that's fine for me. When Windows Mobile came along, my reaction was, oh, why are you trying to muscle in? You're just making it more complicated for people. The average person who walks into a shop doesn't really, you know, care about the specific capabilities, just so long as they can run the software that everyone else.
But that's the thing, though, because we're getting to a situation where you won't, and already are at, that you won't be able to run the software that everyone else is. I mean, the amount of people that have abandoned developing for BlackBerry in the past sort of 18 months is quite a lot. There's, you know, where you used to see sort of apps were compatible for iOS, Android, and BlackBerry, now it's, you know, it's just iOS and Android.
Yeah.
And maybe occasionally Windows.
Yeah, Windows is sort of, oh yeah, we do that too. for any old bastards listening, Windows Mobile seems to me a bit like the MSX. Because a lot of the games got released on the MSX in the UK in, you know, the 80s.
Yeah.
But they were never talked about.
No.
You'd see an advert and it would say Commodore 64, Spectrum, Amstrad CPC, and I'd have a mate who would he'd be there with his MSX, and he'd get the game too, and I didn't know it was coming out on that because no one mentioned it. So it's, people are doing software for Windows Mobile, but it's not really a thing.
Yeah.
Nobody talks about implied conversation, really.
Yeah, and I've just remembered now, there were rumours last year of a Facebook phone.
Oh, yeah. I remember that. I remember that in the run-up to the announce of the sort of social search thing that they announced earlier this month, that some people were speculating, oh, they're finally going to come out with this Facebook mobile phone.
Why?
I'm like, what the heck does Facebook know about operating systems?
What the hell does Facebook know about social media most of the time?
Well, that too, considering what they've been doing everything since its flotation on the stock market last year.
Yeah.
But I think I want to move us on. Just want to briefly discuss the fact that it's something like, what, 20 years this year, roughly, or so, since Dragon Ball Z came out first in Japan, and it's getting all coloured up. In a pretty bright colour re-edition in Japan. it's also going to have some added extra commentary. This is going to hit in Japanese stores in February, and North American versions will be inbound as well, though not necessarily for the same branches of storyline. But I've seen a couple of the prints that Comics Alliance, like sort of page pullouts that Comics Alliance have managed to get their hands on, and they were looking quite pretty. I mean, it's a rare thing to see manga in colour, especially something as well known as that. So yeah, it was just kind of, oh, that's so pretty.
I presume it's all CG coloured.
One would assume so. I mean, I can't imagine. I mean, because obviously you're dealing with lines already.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, if I could get my hands on one of the American versions, I think I'd be quite interested. And if I did, it'd be the first manga that I'd have bought in probably about 3 years. Haven't been that interested lately. There's been a bit of a dearth of titles. Lack of titles.
Yeah, I'm completely out of the loop when it comes to, you know, what mangas are available or what animes.
Well, I mean, it's something that a lot of people don't realise is that Tokyo Pop in America kind of went a bit... it's only just surviving in Europe the last time I heard. I mean, that made actual publishing news when that happened. So.
The sort of death knell for me collecting mangas was when Viz Comics... started being a bit arsey about letting their stuff be imported. That's a few years back now.
Yeah.
I mean, this just suddenly realised, hang on, we're getting all these sales from Europe. We don't like money. And it's like, here's my money. Take my money. I want to keep reading Ranma Half and Maison Okoku.
I think it's somewhat telling of the sort of stuff that gets printed in English at the moment that I'm having previously collected a bit of manga and not been interested in it for ages, that I'm getting excited about something that's almost as old as myself.
Yeah. It's a reprint.
And it's a reprint.
A reprint.
And it's just kind of like, because a lot of the stuff, you know, if I ever sort of have it, I mean, I'm not saying it's Waterstones' fault, but whenever I have a look in my local Waterstones at the manga shelves, and it all looks rather samey. And I mean, the most individual looking thing usually on it is something like Death Note. And Death Note's been out for bloody ages now.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, thinking there, one of the last full-colour mangas I collected was when they first started printing Ranma Half in English in America. They took the lead from the first, you know, the old tradition with manga, with the first few pages being in colour.
Do you know what, I've never actually encountered a manga print like that.
Well, with them being published in, you know, big tomes in Japan originally, they'd only have so many pages in colour.
Okay.
And then the rest would be in black and white. And what they started doing with Ranma Half when they were doing the very first, you know, book and doing them in English, is that they printed them in colour, but because it went black and white after a few pages, they coloured the rest. And it was in, like, watercolour.
Okay.
And they looked very nice, but you are talking about they were nearly £5 a book. Or £5 an issue of about 40-odd pages. So they started doing them in, you know, black and white past a point.
Okay.
But yeah, full-colour manga would be really nice.
So, yeah.
And Dragon Ball Z.
Yeah.
I've tried getting into a few times in the past, but the fact that I saw some episodes in Spain, obviously dubbed into Spanish, but the fact that it would start with a fight in progress and then it would be a half hour episode and the fight would still be going on.
Yeah.
At the end. Come on.
So I used to watch Dragon Ball Z occasionally on like Fox Kids back in the day, and I used to like it. The long fights didn't used to bother me that much, and then I tried many years later trying to get into Bleach, and the first series of that yes, there were fights, but they didn't tend to go on for too long, and there was other stuff going on. And then I gave up after watching part of series two, and I just I had like up to, I think, season 4 or 5 collected on DVD to get through. Yeah. Yeah. And I was just like, no, I'm just going to give this to my brother, because I just can't handle the extra long fight scenes that he started fitting in everywhere with hardly any story happening in between.
So I'll just hit him.
Yeah. It was disappointing.
If it would be like a game, then they'd spend like half the episode just like reconfiguring their stuff so that they can get best equipment.
Yeah, it made perfect sense why every single Dragon Ball game I ever came across when I was collecting up either the cartridges or the ROM sets. A friend was collecting those. But every single one was a bloody beat-em-up.
Yeah.
And I can see why, because that's almost all they were.
Even if you did like a RPG, it'd just be the sort of 10% story, 90% fighting stuff.
You know what it would be like, a Dragon Ball RPG? And this is where someone says, but there was one. It's when they do the all the bosses you've encountered throughout an RPG, and where they lump them all one after the other right at the end of the game. Yeah. That's what a Dragon Ball Z RPG would be like if it was actually true to the spirit of the series. It would just be massive long boss fight that you just about scratch through, and then another one.
Sure, I think I'm going to move us on now to the slight bit of X-Men Days of Future Past news that's happened this week. That Anna Paquin, who previously played Rogue, Ellen Page, who played Kitty Pryde in X-Men 3, and Sean Ashmore, who was Iceman, they're all reprising their roles for X-Men Days of Future Past, joining Hugh Jackman, Patrick Stewart, and Ian McKellen. And like, a lot of people are trying to sound like excited about this. I'm like, yeah, it's cool. But considering that the X-Men Days of Future Past features all the newer, older versions of the main characters, if that makes sense. That was X-Men The Last... No, what was the...
The Last Stand, yeah.
Yeah, The Last... X-Men The Last Stand.
X-Men The Last...
Is that X-Men 3?
Yes.
No, the prequel.
What, are you talking about Wolverine...
No!
First Class?
Yes, X-Men First... Yeah, X-Men First Class.
Or otherwise known as the good X-Men film.
Yes. But it's featuring a load of the characters from that. And I'm like, well, surely the only way... Because there's no way they're making it that it's the previous film's characters having a big part in this sequel to X-Men Days of Future Past. Not X-Men. X-Men the...
First class.
There's too many X-Men films now. My brain's just melting out between my ears. No, wait, sorry, that's seeing naked Hugh Jackman as Wolverine in Wolverine Origins. Yes, that's it.
Anyway, back on track.
Anyway, yeah, so having Rogue, Kitty, and like Iceman coming back for X-Men Days of Future Past, and people are acting like, oh, it's going to be kind of like a big thing. And I'm like, nah, it's like a flash to the future, you know, like... this is what's going to happen.
Almost like a Terminator 2 kind of...
These are what these people will become. And all that sort of thing. I can't...
But I mean, so, if you think about it...
You're saying this is going to be more of a... This is going to be a sequel to First Class rather than a current generation X-Men film with them in.
Yeah, it's a sequel to First Class.
Oh, good.
In case that wasn't clear from the other stuff, because the fact that they're just piling in the original actors so much.
Yeah, it was a little bit confusing looking at it.
Yeah, but it's kind of like, because it's using the characters from First Class, so it means that they've got the bigger roles, the longer screen time. So surely this means that having all these other actors back to reprise their roles means that, unless they've got a really, 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 really bad and cheesy time-travelling storyline involved, which wouldn't be a first for the X-Men universe, to be honest, that means that it's just going to be snippets of this is what happens in the future after all's been said and done in the film. And so basically they've only got like a couple of seconds screen time or something, but everyone's acting like it's a bit of a big deal.
Well, hopefully it'll just be a, hey, do you remember that time when we wibbly wobbly, wibbly wobbly, wibbly wobbly. There we go.
But, so, yeah. If you think about it, like Anna Paquin and Ellen Page, they've done some pretty high class stuff, you know, since, you know, The Last Stand.
Yeah.
I mean, admittedly, I've not really seen much of, what was it, True Blood.
Yeah.
Mm.
But obviously, she's the main character. She's the main character in that one.
Yeah, and I like her in that, which I didn't in the original trilogy.
So
I just didn't. I thought she was a bad rogue.
Yeah. So it's going to be interesting. And they all seem to be very young in face. And I mean, I think Joseph Gordon-Levitt does it well. I mean, I'm not entirely sure whether it's just because I remember him Third Rock from the Sun. And so I always kind of envision him being like, you know, that age. Well, not quite that age, but you know what I mean. That they
was he the young one who was the old one?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, he was.
Right. Yeah. I never get used to seeing him in stuff. It's like, what are you doing? You can't drink yet.
But yeah, the other characters, I'm not saying that everyone's like aged massively, but I'm sure through the miracles of makeup and computer graphics that everyone will look like what they did at some point before or after The Last Stand.
Well, I mean, if they could morph Joseph Gordon-Levitt's face in Looper to make it look like Bruce Willis.
That's true. Anything's possible now.
Admittedly, it was eerie as anything. It was a bit like, oh.
But not quite Tron Legacy.
No.
But I mean, the thing that actually helped with Looper was the fact that Lovett actually got the idiosyncrasies of how Willis, you know, kind of acts. You know, he's got the little kind of the looks, the slow kind of movement of the head and, you know, stuff like that.
Lovett is a good character actor.
Mm.
But going back to sort of like just people making more of this X-Men Days of Future Past casting than needs to be made. It's either, like I said, it's either they've got tiny roles and it's a, oh, look what happens in the future at the end of the film moment, or there is somebody sneaking in, well, I say sneaking in, sort of crowbarring in a really, really dodgy time-travelling plot somewhere. And I'm not saying that just because it's Days of Future Past in the title, but
I know.
Go on.
I remember in the 90s cartoon series of X-Men, there was, I think a two or three parter. That was Days of Future Past, and it was, I can't remember who it was.
It was Cable, wasn't it?
Yeah, but somebody got transported into the future, and I can't remember who it was.
Wolverine?
No, Wolverine was there, but I don't think he was the one transported. I think it might have been Jubilee or something.
Might have been Jubilee.
Cyclops, maybe?
Mm.
No, I think Cyclops. I think Cyclops and Jean Grey were meant to be dead by that point. Well, like in the future type thing.
Yeah. I was gonna say what I was gonna say earlier, but it's just completely flown my mind now.
I'm sorry. Oh yes.
that was it. I've been rewatching Star Trek Voyager lately, so please, God, no more time travel.
Right. You've heard it
before. No time travel, no spatial anomalies, no alternate timelines.
Does this mean that you're not looking forward to the next half of the series of Doctor Who?
No, that's different. They're in a time machine, not a spaceship. If they were in a spaceship and they kept bouncing around through time, they'd have a little bit of a problem. And if they kept solving things with Deus Ex Machina as well, no.
I'm going to take us on to just a little bit to do the Wii U and Virtual Console games being in 50 hertz. Retro, you came across this. What is the deal?
Right, well, many moons ago when the world was young and dinosaurs ruled the earth, There were games consoles like the NES and the Super Nintendo and the Mega Drive and the Master System and the N64 and such. But we have the problem with Japan and America are in the NTSC, and those run at 60 frames a second. Europe runs at 50 frames a second because it uses PAL. So what would happen, the easiest way to stop these games from outputting at a speed at a frames per second, which some TVs at the time couldn't handle, would be just to have them run at the slower 50 hertz speed. This would slow them down by 17.5%. There are some fairly vivid examples of this. Like, if you look on YouTube for PAL Sonic the Hedgehog on Mega Drive, and then look for NTSC Sonic the Hedgehog on Mega Drive, listen to the music. It's horrible what happens to the music. The music is slower, the game is slower, it just feels more sluggish. And this is what we had to put up with consoles in the 80s and early 90s.
I've got to admit, I do remember Sonic actually being quite sluggish and whatnot. But
yeah,
I thought that was just the game. I didn't realise that it was actually directly connected to the slowdown of the gameplay in order to get the 50 hertz rather than 60 hertz.
Yeah, you don't realise at the time. So back then, I mean, a lot of people would just put up with it. But once you started wanting the imported games, you started encounter that. And what would happen would be a lot of games wouldn't quite run right on PAL consoles. So people would start getting into the 50, 60 hertz switches. You could get modifications to your consoles. So it would actually be a physical switch on the side of your Super Nintendo, your NES or your Mega Drive. And it would switch it to the other frame rate.
Okay.
And suddenly your games would actually play like they were intended. Seeing as, come on, we all know there were some developers in the UK doing console games, but they were few and far between. And even when they did, they knew that the big markets were America and Japan.
Yeah.
So they coded towards the NTSC speeds. Some companies like Rare did actually adapt the speeds of the games.
Okay.
But many didn't. And if any of you are into emulators out there, you'll know precisely what I mean. Because most people I know who are into, the emulation scene, they'll know that most of the time you avoid the European versions of the games because they'll run slower. Now, when it comes to Virtual Console, on both the Wii and the Wii U, apparently Nintendo still hate Europe. I mean, even more than they already do when you look at their release schedules and timings.
I mean, I think I know why. I think basically because the Wii and the Wii U have designed to be, all-encompassing. So, people with 30-year-old TVs, they wouldn't be able to handle most, Wii games at 60 hertz.
I know as an example, the Wii does have a toggle in its settings, so you can set it to 50 or 60 hertz.
Ah, yes, I do remember that, yeah.
Yeah, so in other words, if they really wanted to, if people were, if people had old TVs, and first of all, well done on having a CRT TV that old. Because at the end of the 90s, I don't think I could find a TV. Well, no, rather at the turn of the 90s, I don't think I could find TVs that couldn't handle a 60 hertz signal.
Really? I mean, I had problems at one point because I had a GameCube and I actually wanted to play Metroid Prime 2 Echoes.
Yeah.
And that a bit like Geist, was a 60 hertz only.
Yeah, I remember.
Those wouldn't play on my TV because they were 60 hertz.
Did it have a SCART socket?
I believe so.
God, now that is weird because most TVs that had SCART sockets, they were, that was almost a guarantee. You couldn't guarantee the guarantee, but if they were good enough to have a SCART socket, they would.
But I do remember basically because obviously the GameCube it had the three, I think it's, what is it, component? No, not component. Composite cables.
Yeah.
And SCART connector, and I think that's how it used to plug it in.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that wasn't RGB, but, yeah, it was usually good enough.
Yeah.
But, of course, the whole excuse, and, you know, you can tell already where I'm coming from with this. The whole excuse was that, you know, for a valid enough reason in the 80s and such, the consoles that they sold were 50 hertz. They were locked at 50 hertz. They were 50 hertz only. That was it.
Yeah.
Of course, that was their decision, but I can kind of understand why.
Hmm.
These days, like I said, good luck trying to find an old enough CRT that's not going to handle a 60 hertz signal. And even if you did, you're talking about modern consoles that have 50, 60 hertz settings in the setting, in it.
Yeah.
Right there in the console settings. You don't have to do anything in the game.
Hmm.
And yeah, there's simply no excuse when the virtual console games on the 3DS, which is, you know, quite a few, NES.
Can I just ask, is this all games, or is this just like some?
Well, they've only released some so far, haven't they?
Okay. What, for Wii U, you mean?
Yeah, for the Wii U.
Yeah.
So, Balloon Fight was the first, so far as I know.
And that was only in 50 hertz?
Yeah, 50 hertz only. And it's absolutely bizarre even if you ignore the fact that there are console settings so that people who could not have 60 hertz, they could set that if they really wanted. If Nintendo, you know, wanted to, they could have, you know, have that and rely on that. You're talking about the Wii U, where all LCDs accept 60 hertz.
Yeah.
And you're talking about a games console that has a big screen in its controller. So, if you were talking about, you know, the worst set of decisions ever, in the worst case scenario,
yeah,
if you couldn't play the game that you'd bought for pennies on the virtual console for the Wii U, you could still play it on your joypad.
Yeah.
And it's like, please, you know, after this, I'll see if I can go and find a YouTube video which has got a comparison for something like Sonic the Hedgehog, and you can see the kinds of, you know, speed difference it makes. Mm. And that game, it's just everyone's played it a little bit in one way or another. So that's just a good way to illustrate the point. But
yeah.
In the 80s, there was a bad excuse for 50 hertz only games.
Yeah.
This is 2013. There is simply no excuse.
Unless it's got something to do with
licensing
or ratings.
Now, that has been raised, and that could be an issue, but it is the fact that these games are available on the 3DS, or, you know, certain of the same games are available on the 3DS, on the European store,
yeah,
and they run at 60 hertz. So why on earth are they running on that, and not on the Wii U?
That is pretty weird.
It's pretty annoying.
I have horrible flashbacks to knowing that we're going to get, you know, the worst version, which is what we always used to feel in.
Yeah.
It's like when I was in college, this will date me. When I was in college, Street Fighter 2 had just come out on the Super Nintendo.
Okay.
And I knew about three or four people who were importing it because they weren't releasing it in Europe. They were keeping hold of it. And of course, it cost an absolute fortune to get it imported. And the specialist game stores would all sell adapters, which would be about 20, 30 quid a piece. And they wouldn't adjust the speed.
Oh.
So, yeah, even back then, we knew we were getting shafted on these. And there were... It was the whole excuse of, yeah, but if you wait and buy the PAL version, that'll be converted properly and it will run at the right speed. It didn't. So, yeah. I've been there, done that, and it's just, I cannot comprehend why it's still happening. And there are people who are defending it, saying, oh, but this is how I remember playing it. So, well, good for you.
Oh.
Well, to be fair,
if that's so important, have a 50-hertz setting in there as well.
I mean, to be fair, if the Virtual Console was all about how you remember playing it, then they should have controller adapters.
Yes.
For the consoles, because I remember playing the NES games on an NES pad, not on
And as I've said to people as well, it's you like things how you remembered them at the time. Does that mean that if you buy, say, a Blu-ray version of Terminator 2, do you go through the rigmarole of getting it copied onto a VHS? And then you can watch it on VHS, because that's how you remember watching it the first time round. No, you don't. Why the hell would you do that?
Okay. I think I'm going to move us on to our main discussion of the day, surprisingly, considering how much we've given to everything else. I'm not sure if you've heard, we have all heard, I might add, but J.J. Abrams is taking on the humongous task of being the director for Star Wars Episode 7.
Yay, it's not George Lucas.
Well, we knew that was kind of a given. They kind of made that as the announcement with the whole Disney takeover. But what does he? Apparently, Abrams is contracted for at least a third Star Trek movie.
Yeah.
And obviously, Into Darkness is out this year.
Yes.
So that's out this year. He's contracted for a third film. It doesn't look like we'd have another Star Wars until around maybe 2015. Clearly, Abrams, it's been difficult for Abrams to direct both. Mm. So there's been a suggestion from some quarters that Abrams would be taking on a producer role for the third Star Trek film. But even as a producer, I would argue that it's a bit of a conflict of interest for Abrams to have such an important role in two very conflicting SF franchises.
Nerd fight.
From two very combat-ready media empires. I can't imagine Disney and Viacom, who own Paramount, who owns Star Trek, I think, actually happily getting along, palsying up to each other.
Even though it is the lesson that Star Trek tells us, we can all get along.
Yeah. Theoretically, this will be everybody's wet dream, because J.J. Abrams did a stellar job, with a lot of stuff, including the first Star Trek film. So actually having somebody behind the helm of Episode 7 that actually obviously knows what they're doing would be a good idea. And you would have thought that to a certain extent it would unite the fan base for Star Wars fanboys and the Star Trekkers, or Trekkies, or whatever you want to call them.
You'd think
but
so.
But somehow there is this idea that a bit like with what happened with certain versions of games on Xbox and PlayStation 3 and whatnot, they're probably going to be fighting, saying, yeah, because Abrams did yours, ours is weaker.
Yeah.
I don't know whether that's a realistic fanboy reaction. But
they've been trying to portray it as that, haven't they? Because, the big rivalry. So I've never had a problem with, one or the other. I've been a fan of both because I like sci-fi.
I've never really been a fan of Star Wars because it's never been about the technology. I've always loved technology in my sci-fi, so I think I'll stick with Star Trek.
And we're not talking about issues of whether or not the technology is realistic, but whether or not it's kind of put into a great enough context that it at least allows you to suspend your disbelief.
So I mean, Star Wars is pretty much a soap opera in space.
It's not quite EastEnders, but
Ricky, use the force.
But I could certainly see a similarity between the rolling volumes of empty space in Star Wars and the rolling empty hills of Yorkshire, aka Emmerdale.
Mm.
You know, you've got all those clans, you got all these conflicting groups, you've always got somebody trying to blow up a planet, i.e. develop a new property.
I remember that episode fondly when the sand people you know, raided the wool pack.
But can I just say, though, I mean, it, you know, there was this big storyline in EastEnders with, you ain't my mum. Oh, yes, I am. Pretty much the same thing as, Luke, I am your father. No!
Yeah, but less of an incesty vibe.
I
presume I don't watch them.
I'm not.
I'm so gonna get a lot of hate after this.
I'm not so worried. Like I was gonna say, I'm not so worried about the fans dueling each other at conventions over this, which will inevitably happen for those who are perhaps a bit too over enthusiastic in how they express their love for these franchises. But I am slightly, I on the business end, because I do like me looking at my business in film and stuff and what's happening at Hollywood and whatnot. And I'm a bit...
In Hollywood.
And I'm a bit kind of... Somebody at Paramount can't be happy about this.
Oh, you can bet they're not.
And it does make me wonder if actually somebody's slowly cranking up a legal team over this. And actually, we might hear in a couple of weeks, actually, Abrams can't do one or the other because it would be too big a conflict of interest.
Who knows? It might just mean that the next third new relaunched Star Trek film is going to be a little bit later, which I could put up with, frankly.
Mm. But then again, that depends what the sort of contractual... I mean, I haven't heard what the contractual obligations are for...
Yeah, they're usually within a certain time frame, aren't they?
But
yeah.
Can I just say that? Nobody's questioning the fact that Joss Whedon's doing S.H.I.E.L.D. TV series. You know, when he's done The Avengers, and presumably he's carrying on with The Avengers.
Yeah, but that's because they were within two... the same universe. Yeah, and B, Disney's the ultimate rights holders there.
Yeah,
in both.
By the same token, the kind of workload, which is what is meant to be, you know, the basis for the, oh, our film's going to suffer because it's having to do that one as well type thing is, you know.
Yeah, but I'm more worried about, I suppose, his workload, but also where he is going to be committed on a business level. I mean, I would hope he would be utterly professional and be equally, you know, commit to both as he should.
He'll do both, because I mean, I would have thought most kind of higher ups, you know, do that kind of thing. They compartmentalize. They, you know, do this film and then they do that film.
But then it's just the fact that we could be in a situation where the third Star Trek could be competing either with, depending on how long the cycle is, either episode. It's unlikely that the third Star Trek film will be in 2 years, but. Mm. Depending on how things play out, it could be delayed enough that the third one comes out at the same time as episode 8.
I personally don't think that they'd be that mad.
I hope not. Because I don't want to see the two going head-to-head at the same time. It would be blood.
It'd actually be interesting, because Hollywood have always had this thing. Not necessarily the industry itself, but studios have had this thing where, say, for example, Ants have come out at the same time as A Bug's Life. You know, that kind of one is basically pretty much the same kind of story as the other, or same kind of theme. So that's always been there in Hollywood. But at least it's interesting this time around, because it will be, you know, whoever wins, you know, well, it's Abraham. What, Abraham?
Abraham.
Abrams.
That's going to win.
Yeah,
whether we win or lose, kind of thing.
He'll be laughing all the way to the bank at the end of this, regardless.
Oh, definitely. He'll be just rolling around in fivers.
He'll be like, ha, 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 ha,
ha. Oh, that's just terrible.
Ha, 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 ha.
But
a long time ago in a contract far, far away.
But I do wonder what the fans... I mean, it's like... I suppose when I watched... was it Fanboys for the first time?
Yeah.
And seeing the eternal conflict between Trekkie and Star Wars fans immortalised...
To be honest, I've never screen. Actually... to be honest, I don't know that many geeks in real life that's so hardcore about their love for either Star Trek or Star Wars. So I've never... I don't know how realistic that is, but...
I don't think I've ever really encountered it in real life.
I think it would be funny to, like, watch on YouTube.
I don't know what... I'm currently getting a vision in my head of that scene from The Dark Knight where the Joker kind of snaps the pool cues in half and throws it to the guys, the gang guys, and it's just like, you know, sort of tryouts and all that. But, of course, instead of it being members of gangs, it's Trek fans and Star Wars fans in costume.
Or people with rubber ears.
Yeah.
And fluorescent tubes.
Yeah. That's what's going through my head right now.
I think the time to start worrying is when they change the syntax of the Vulcans.
Are you?
Well, because logical, obviously isn't. Yoda is and logical this is.
Something leaks into the script, or perhaps it becomes an Easter egg for eager fans to jump upon and then question on internet forums and social media platforms for months and months upon end.
Although, do you reckon Abrams are going to have, like, nightmares, like, after, like, everything's done? Like, you know, his dream in that is in the premiere, watching, like, the new film and whatnot, and all of a sudden Yoda comes onto the Enterprise. It's like, No! I've mixed them up, goddammit!
No, you know what, maybe somebody, or maybe this will be the impetus we need for a new Spaceballs-type comedy to be made, where the two sort of universes, like you say, do become a kind of weird... wacky, amazing mashup.
Yes, excellent, and I've got the perfect guy to direct it. J.J. Abrams!
No! It'll turn out everyone was dead halfway through, and the second half is just an explanation that's not.
No, but I think we need to package this idea up quickly and go talk to Mel Brooks. He's still alive. There's a chance.
Yeah, but you know it wouldn't be Mel Brooks. It would be the Scary Movie plot.
I know. I loved the first Scary Movie. The second one creeped the hell out of me. I kind of liked the third, but the source material wasn't much. And then I kind of gave up from the team after that point.
I mean, I like the fact that Spaceballs, they actually use the same techniques and same special effects, and in certain instances, the same crew. Star Wars.
The Spaceballs is the rare thing of a parody film that really does work.
I think the other is obviously Airplane.
Oh yeah, but that was more a parody of the general thing.
Hmm.
And yeah, that. Airplane. Excellent.
I'm trying to think of any recent parody films that worked.
I have to admit, I did stick on TV the one day when I was younger. What I thought was Airplane, you know, it had that same image quality, you know, kind of 70s style and whatnot. And it turned out basically because this guy got on the plane and like blew himself up with a bomb. It's like, blimey, I don't remember Airplane being this dark.
What were you actually watching?
I'm not sure. It's obviously something that, you know, Airplane was meant to be parodying.
Oh, brilliant.
And they were ripe for parodying.
Yeah.
I've seen a few of the Airplane disaster films from, like, the late 70s. They were just, you know, chucked on TV, you know, Saturday afternoon type. You know, obviously, you know, found in the TV industry equivalent of the Tesco bargain bucket.
Yeah.
With very good reason, because they were just bad.
Yeah.
And there was no cannibalism, so very disappointing.
Maybe everything will be fine, and everything will be released on time, and nobody will get sued. Perhaps all will be well, as Abrams straddles, as I described it on Twitter earlier, straddles two of the biggest sci-fi franchises to ever have been created. I think
sci-fi universes, because that just makes it sound even more...
epic.
Yeah.
Straddles two of the biggest sci-fi universes ever created.
And you know why it will be fine?
Why?
Because one of them was done a long time ago.
Really? What, like, maybe in a galaxy far...
far, far away. Yeah.
Hmm.
There's still this universe.
Yeah, we're just waiting a long time.
See, that's what kind of boggles the mind for me with the concept of, like, DS9. No,
yeah.
It's like this wormhole that went all the way to the Gamma Quadrant, and it's like, what is the probability that there's actually a wormhole that would go into the same galaxy as yours?
Well, yeah, true, but I remember there was some explanation.
Yeah, I think it was like an artificial wormhole, but yeah.
Yeah, that one was. Yeah, I know far too much about Star Trek. It was an artificial one created by the wormhole aliens, who were the prophets of the Bajorans.
Yeah.
Mm. I think that's all we do have time for this week. I'm sure you've missed Cookie as much as we have. Hopefully he'll have internet next week. But until then, it's good night from...
It's good night from me, Paul Wood. I'm Super Retroid on Twitter and retroid@eurogamer.net.
Okay, it's good night from me, Paul Blewett. I have a website, paul-blewett.com, and I'm on Twitter as Paul Blewett.
And it's good night from me, Emily King. You can find me on Twitter at ek6891. You can also visit my website at ek-creations.com. You can also find Nerds Assemble, amazingly, at www.nerdsassemble.co.uk. We're also on iTunes. We're on Twitter at Nerds Podcast. We're on Facebook as Nerds Assemble Podcast and Google Plus as Nerds Assemble Podcast. So, good night.
Good night.